Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. And now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us.
We're going to be in Matthew chapter 14. And start reading in verse 13 and read down to verse number 21. Of course, this passage is coming on the heels of what we looked at last week, where Jesus is hearing of what Herod is saying, and Herod is saying that Jesus's miracles must be John the Baptist risen from the dead, and Jesus is thinking of that and remembering that and grieving the loss of John the Baptist, his friend, and the forerunner to his ministry. And we'll see as he's grieving that, he goes in verse 13 to be by himself for a time. So let's pick that up in verse 13 and we'll read down to verse number 21. When Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof and followed him on foot out of the cities, and Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him saying, "This is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals." But Jesus said unto them, "They need not depart. Give ye them to eat." And they say unto him, "We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He said, "Bring them hither to me." And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes. And looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake and gave the loaves to his disciples and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat and were filled, and took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men, beside women and children. And I was thinking as I was preparing for this message, and this particular miracle that Jesus does, this feeding of the 5,000, you know, I think we have all been in a place where we felt like we were up against an impossible situation. Something that just seemed overwhelming, something that seemed impossible in the moment. I was going to share a personal illustration, as I normally do, to start as I begin a sermon. But the truth is this, I imagine that I could go around this room and each person could probably share their own personal illustration, your own story, your own time in your life where you were up against something that seemed impossible, something that seemed difficult to overcome, where you were up against the wall and maybe you thought to yourself, "Well, where do we go from here? What do I do now? What is the next step? What should we do? Where do we go from here? How do I go on from here?" I think we've all faced those kind of moments in our lives. We've all been in that place. Maybe it was something financial. Maybe it was something that was related to family. Maybe it was work related. Maybe it was something else. I don't know what it was for you. Or maybe there's multiple things, but I know that we've all been in that kind of place where we're facing something that seems impossible. And we think to ourselves when we pray and we say, "God, how can I endure this? How can I continue on in this? How can I overcome? God, how are you going to make this work? I don't see it. I don't understand it." And we've all been there before, I think, because we all realize that we are not all sufficient. We don't have everything that we need. We don't have it all figured out, right? And sometimes God brings us to this place that we understand, or we have to understand, where we're confronted with this thought: "No, I am not sufficient for this in and of myself. I don't have enough. I don't know enough. I'm not adequate enough. I don't have enough power. I don't have the ability to do anything about the situation. And we get to that place where we say, I'm not sufficient, but God, I need you to be sufficient for this. I need you to work in this situation. God, I need you to do something that I cannot possibly do. And I think that's where we find the disciples in this passage, that they come to this place, and the multitudes, they're all there. I think they come to a place where, number one, they realize their inability. They were not going to be able to feed these multitudes of people. They realize their insufficiency. And then secondly, they come to this place where they find their sufficiency in Jesus. That he is everything that they need him to be, and even more, in fact. That Jesus provides above and beyond, actually, what they needed. They weren't sufficient, but they found Jesus to be sufficient. That's what we find in this passage. Now, this miracle, I like that picture. I saw that when I saw it online. This was the day, the Jerusalem Daily News headline. This was the day after, I think, that the newspaper was published. But it's talking about this miracle, the 5,000 fed. And we know this miracle rather well. We've read it many times. You've heard it preached on before. It's one of only two miracles that are recorded in all four gospel accounts. Does anyone have any idea what the other miracle is? Nope. It's a good guess. But the other miracle is the resurrection. This is the only, you say, maybe I'm tricking you, saying the resurrection was a trick question. But that is the other miracle that's mentioned. So this is the only one, other than the resurrection, that's actually mentioned in all four gospel accounts. And so I think the fact that it is recorded for us four different times in all the gospel accounts, and by the way, we probably won't look at it in depth when we get there. We're going to spend time with this morning, but in Matthew 15, Matthew actually records a second time that this feeding of a multitude happens in the exact same way. Jesus feeds another 4,000 to 10,000 people. So the fact that we see this miracle four times in Matthew and Mark and Luke and John shows us, I think, that there is a very unique importance to this miracle. There's a reason that it is recorded in all four gospel accounts. And it's placed in all four gospel accounts kind of at the climax of Jesus' ministry. Jesus has been ministering for some time. He's been healing. He's been casting out demons. But this is coming to the climax of his earthly ministry. And remember, we said this as we began, but Jesus, at the start of Matthew chapter 15, is still grieving the loss of John the Baptist. Right? Herod heard of Jesus' work and the miracles that he's doing and his teaching. And he says, this must be John the Baptist risen from the dead. And how else could that happen? Well, John recounts for us the story of how Herod beheaded John the Baptist. He took his life, and we looked at that last week. And so Jesus goes off to be by himself for a time, probably to grieve this loss, the thought of it. But the people follow after him, as they often did. They learn where he is, and they follow him, it says in verse 13, on foot out of the cities. They hear this is where Jesus is. This is where Jesus is going. And all of the people follow him. And it said, we read it, that Jesus saw them. And as he looked out on the multitudes, as he often does, he was moved with compassion on them. He was hurting himself, right? He was grieving. But he's moved with compassion and he heals the sick and all those that come to him. The people follow Jesus, and I think the question is this: why were they following Jesus? Why were they so eager to get to where he was? What were they after? And I think we find this so often with the multitudes, that they are literally Matthew says, running on foot out of the cities. They're literally chasing after Jesus, running after him. Why? Because they saw the miracles, they saw the healing, and they want that for themselves. They're following Jesus really for pragmatic means. What can I get from him? I have a need that I want to have met. I'd like to be healed. I would like to be fed. And so they're following Jesus, not necessarily for who Jesus is or what Jesus is teaching, but really they're following Jesus for what they could get out of him. And to be honest, I'm not sure I could really fault them for that. Because I think we would do the exact same thing if we were in that situation. Remember, this is a day and age where there was no social help outside of your own family. There is no government assistance. There's no government welfare. There's no child tax benefits. None of those things. If you don't grow enough food, if you're not able to provide for your own family, then you literally die. You'll starve. There's no outside help. So of course, they would follow Jesus to be healed, because if they're not healed, they can't work, and therefore they can't provide. So of course, they follow after Jesus for those reasons. And this Jesus shows up and he's healing people, he's feeding people, and he's doing all of these miraculous things. Of course, they want to be in on that. Of course, they want to see that. So they run after him. And I think one of the lessons that we learn right at the beginning of this account is this: Jesus is not a means to an end. Jesus is not simply a means to an end. He is so much more than that. In fact, John tells us in his recalling of this account, and you can read it for yourself in John chapter 6, but after Jesus feeds the multitudes and they see this miracle done, John tells us that they come and they try to take Jesus by force and make him their king. Why? Because he was meeting their physical needs. And the reality is this: they couldn't get their eyes off their physical needs long enough to hear the actual message of what Jesus was preaching and what he was teaching. They were more focused on having their needs met than they were understanding what Jesus was trying to teach. And so at the end of this account, Jesus leaves them and he goes somewhere else where they would hear his message and hopefully receive it. I was thinking this way, just by application, as we think of this, that there are so many people that are still doing the exact same thing today. They want the benefits of having what Jesus offers without actually wanting Jesus themselves. They follow him for pragmatic means. What can I get out of him? How can I be blessed? What is it that I can have for myself? It's kind of like living in a neighborhood where you're the only one that has a truck. I know that doesn't really apply here because everybody has a truck. But when you live in a neighborhood, I know people that live in a place where they're the only one with a truck. And guess what? Everybody is all of a sudden their best friend. They all want him. Why? Not because of who he is, but because he has something that they can use. Is something that they can use for their own ends. You realize quickly, we've all experienced that, I think, to some point, but they want not who Jesus is, but they want what Jesus can offer them, what Jesus can give them. You know, I was thinking, I was just watching a video this last week. Of course, it's the election season is in high frenzy right now down in the United States. And I would encourage, don't watch too much of it, because it can be a little overwhelming over the next 8 or 9 days. It's going to be over the top. But I was watching a video, and I think this kind of made its rounds away, but it was Kamala Harris interviewing with Anderson Cooper. I don't know if anybody saw that video or not. And by the way, this was a day after, at one of her rallies, somebody shouted out, Jesus Christ is King, or something like that. Jesus is Lord. I don't know exactly what they said. And she said to them, hey, you're at the wrong rally. In other words, this is not for you. And at the very next day, she was interviewing with Anderson Cooper, and she was speaking about how important her faith is to her, and how she grew up in a faith-filled home, and it's so valuable to her. And Anderson Cooper looked at her, and he said, I remember he asked the question, he said, do you pray? And she said, oh yes, I pray every day. Sometimes I even pray two times a day. And she was talking about how valuable her faith is. Now, why would she say that? Well, because to her, Jesus is a means to an end. To her, that saying those things, there's a voting block that wants to hear her say that. And by the way, this is not political. That's true on both sides. Everybody does that this time of year. You'll see that all over the place. I say that to say this to many people, Jesus is nothing more than a means to an end. But friends, we understand that he is so much more than that. He wants to be more than that in your life. He wants to be, it's more than what he can do for you. It's who he is to you. That's what he wants to be. Your sufficiency. Everything you need. So Jesus is healing. And he's teaching. It's been all day now, and it's come into the evening. He's been speaking. He's been doing this all day long, and it comes into the evening, and his disciples come to him in verse number 15, and they say basically this: Jesus, this is a very desolate place. It's deserted. There's nothing here, and it's late. We've been doing this all day long, and the time is past. In other words, people are hungry. They need to go home to get something to eat. So send these people away. They can go into the villages and they can buy themselves something to eat. Send them out. By the way, Matthew 21, 14 verse 21, we just read it, says that this number of people was about 5,000 men besides women and children. So some commentators, it's hard to know exactly what the number of people were that were there, but some commentators say or estimate that there could have been anywhere around 10 to 20,000 people in that crowd, probably closer to 20,000 than 10,000. So this is a huge group. Now, just so you have an idea, I did this for myself, just so you have an idea of what 20,000 people look like, that is a stadium that's full of 20,000 people. So that helps you. The upper bowl, the lower bowl, it's all full of people. It maybe can help you just visualize how many people are sitting here listening to Jesus teaching, being healed. 10 to 20,000 people, just a huge group of people. Now let me ask you this, what village, what town could these people go to and be fed? Right? There's no Costco. There's no Walmarts. There's no ready-made pizzas. Those kind of things didn't exist. Everything had to be made fresh by hand. What city, what town could 20,000 people go to and get food to eat? There was a problem here. There was a lot of people and nothing to eat. And Jesus, of course, he knows that. So in verse 16, he says unto them, they don't need to depart. They don't need to go anywhere. Give them something to eat. John gives us a little more to this exchange between Jesus and Philip specifically. Jesus turns and he says to Philip, Philip, where can we buy bread that all of these people can eat? He asked Philip that question specifically, and I can see, because I would be the same way. I could see the wheels spinning in Philip's mind. How much money do we have? Where are we going to go to get enough food for all of these people to eat? And he's thinking that way, and he's running the numbers, and he says, you know, we have about 200 denarii in the bag. A denarii is about a day's wage. So it's a good amount of money, but he's thinking about all this bread that needs to be bought and thinking the money that they have. And he runs the numbers and is thinking, you know, well, there's not enough money. There's not enough bread. And even if we spend all that money, there's nothing left in the bag. But John tells us that Jesus asked him that question to prove him, to test him, to try his faith. I think Philip was thinking this way: how can we get enough to give everybody just a little bite so that they can have enough to go home and get something to eat? Kind of like one of those samples at Costco. You know, just give them just enough so that they're not super hungry and then they can go. Jesus is wanting to do so much more than that. You know, I was thinking, how should Philip have responded to that question by Jesus? I mean, Philip had seen so many miracles already, right? He had seen the water turned into wine. He had seen, Jesus had just spent all day healing people. What did that look like? Blind people now able to see, lame people able to walk, maybe limbs regenerated. I don't know what all of that healing looks like, but Philip has just witnessed all of that. He's seen someone raised from the dead. He knows that there is nothing that Jesus cannot do. They should have learned that already. So when Jesus turned to Philip or turned to the disciples and said, feed these people, what they should have said is, okay, I don't know how we're going to do it. You tell me what to do and we'll do it. They should have known. And through this conversation, a boy is brought to Jesus. And John tells us that Andrew brings a boy, a lad. And that's interesting. Andrew is always introducing people to Jesus. That's always how we see him in the Gospels. But he brings this boy to Jesus, and this boy comes with a small lunch. I was thinking this. I tried to picture his lunch, and I was picturing these. Does anyone remember these? Does anyone know what that is? Do you still pack those for kids for school? I don't even know if you can buy them anymore. I'm sure you probably can. Lunchables, right? We always were so jealous of the kids in school that had Lunchables, and we didn't. My mom always made me a better lunch than that, but I always wanted to have a Lunchable. But that's what I was thinking. What, a Lunchable is enough for one person, right? It's a few crackers, a few pieces of cheese, and a few pieces of meat. And maybe if you're really lucky, you got the one with the Kit Kat in it. But it's barely enough for even one person, right? You eat that and you're still hungry after that. That's what I have in my mind when this boy brings this little Lunchable to Jesus. His mom had packed in this lunch. They bring it to Jesus, and that's all that they have. Just 5 loaves of bread. Now, these are not loaves of bread that we would think about it. They're probably small little cakes, right? So 5 of these small little bread cakes and two fishes, something like an anchovy or something like that, possibly. And so this is a very small, one boy's little lunch. That's all they have. And wouldn't you have loved to be there for the next part? I don't know how it happened. I would have loved to see how Jesus performed this miracle. I don't know exactly how it happened, but Jesus tells everyone to sit down. He's about to do something amazing, and he takes those 5 little bread loaves, those couple fish, and he blesses them, he gives thanks for them, and he breaks them, and he begins to give them to his disciples to feed the people. And I don't know if he just kept breaking them and they just kept regenerating, or maybe he put them in the basket and every time the disciples took one out, they put their hand in, there was another one in there. I don't know exactly how Jesus performed that miracle, how he did it. But I know this, that before you know it, the whole crowd that was there, between 10 and 20,000 people, were fed. And not just a sample. They ate until they were full, until they were satisfied. The word that Jesus, or Matthew, uses here comes from the root word kortazo, and it has the idea of eating until you are fully satisfied. In fact, the word is often used of an animal when he comes to a feeding trough. He eats until he doesn't need anymore. And then he comes away. He's fully satisfied. So Jesus breaks his bread. The disciples pass it out. And everybody eats until they are fully satisfied, till they have had enough. See, Jesus was more than they needed. Because after they had eaten, the disciples went back and they each picked up a basket full. They had 12 baskets left over. And they quickly realized this, that where they didn't think they were enough or they had enough, Jesus was everything that they needed and even more. The situation looked impossible, but with Jesus, all things are possible. Yeah, with men, this is impossible. With God, all things are possible. And this is really a mind-blowing miracle when you think about it. Just the size of it, the magnitude of the miracle, the effect of it. So many people had their needs met that day, so far and above and beyond what we could ever imagine. And by the way, Jesus met their physical needs so that he could continue to meet their spiritual needs. That's what he was doing there in that place. He fed them physical food so he could continue to feed them spiritual food. Now, we took some time going through that account, but I want to make just a couple points, and I won't be long making these points, but there are a couple of points that I want to make, really two lessons, I think, that we learn from this account, two takeaways that we can take home and think over and meditate on. I think these are critical, and they both run on the same track, but there's two thoughts that I have, two points from this. The first one is this: Jesus is the solution to all my problems. Jesus is the satisfaction of all my hungers, all my needs. He is everything that we need. Your problems that you face, and I may not know what they are, I don't know the impossible that you face. I don't know the difficulties necessarily that you face day by day, either from the difficulties from the past or right now in the present or things that are yet to come in the future. I don't know that, but I do know this, that your problems in God's hands are satisfied. He is sufficient for them. Jesus is all that we need. Philip thought, if I just had bread, if I just had some more money, if I just had these provisions, if I just had something else. And Jesus was saying to him, in effect, Philip, you don't need all of those things. You just need me. I am everything that you need. I am enough for you. When he says in verse 18, bring them hither to me. Bring those things here. Bring that those loaves of bread to me. Bring those fish to me. He was saying, in effect, he's saying to Philip and to his disciples this, listen, I knew that you didn't have enough food. I knew that you didn't have enough money to feed the people. I knew you didn't have the resources. I knew you had no way of getting it. You should have known that I never expected you to feed all of these people from your resources and your own power and your ability. Have you been with me so long and you still don't understand? I didn't expect you to do that on your own. He's saying, in effect, listen, when I asked you to feed them, I was asking you to trust me to feed them. I was giving you an opportunity to bring the little that you had to me and trust me with it. Listen, we all realize our own insufficiencies. We all understand that we have problems that we face. We all have needs. We all face these difficult moments in our lives. But the point is this, he will meet our needs. Maybe he won't do it in the same way that he did yesterday. Maybe he won't do it in the same time frame that I'm thinking, but he will meet them. Every need, every hunger, every fear is either an opportunity to panic and try to solve it myself, or it's an opportunity to turn and give thanks and express trust in Jesus and understand that with God, Nothing shall be impossible. Nothing is too hard for you. God can and he will meet my needs. With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. Jeremiah said this, "Oh Lord God, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. There is nothing too hard for you. You can absolutely meet my needs. Jesus is the solution to all your problems. Jesus is the satisfaction of all your hungers." In the Gospel of John, again, John's account of this miracle, Jesus gives them bread to eat, and then just a few verses later, Jesus turns to them and says, "I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst." See, every person hungers for something. Every person thirsts after something. The majority of the world doesn't even know what they're hungering and thirsting after. But they're hungering after something. They're thirsting after something. We know that it's Jesus. And he is the satisfaction that they need. He is the satisfaction and the sufficiency and the solution that we need. So can you trust your problems with Jesus? Can you come to him with the impossible and trust that he will supply and that he is sufficient for that need and for that situation? Whether it's your past or your present or your future, he is sufficient for you. And it leads us secondly to this thought and really runs along the same track, and that is this: God's resources are greater than our needs. We can trust him. Why? Because his resources are greater than our needs. See, the disciples needed to learn this lesson. They were focused on the size of the need and the scarcity of the human resources available. Right? They were focused. This is such a big need. There's so many people and we don't have enough. I don't have enough bread. I don't have enough money. We don't have enough resources. We don't have enough. What they needed was a new point of view. In fact, they needed to see it from Jesus' eyes, who recognized the size of the need. Yes, it was a great need. But he also recognized the greatness of God's resources that were available to meet that need. Yeah, there was a great need, but God's resources were greater than that need. It's not that the need wasn't large. It was. And that can be true in our own lives as well. The situation that we face is not that it's easy. It can be difficult. The needs may be great. It may be a difficult situation. But it said they were looking at their resources, not God's resources, to meet that need. The disciples were face to face with the supreme power in the universe, and yet they couldn't see it. You know, I think if you would have asked the disciples, "Listen, do you think Jesus can take these 5 loaves and these 2 fish? Do you think he could take those and multiply them and feed everybody?" What would their answer have been? Probably would have been, "Yeah, I believe he can do that. Sure he can." But even prompted by Jesus' suggestion to feed the people, they saw their own lack instead of his sufficiency. And it's easy for us to think, I think we're tempted to think this way, "Well, if I were there, I would have said differently. I would have thought differently. I would have done differently." Yet how many times in our life have we faced a crisis that seems insurmountable and overwhelming? I'm speaking to myself here. Right, that we see these insurmountable problems and we fail to consider God's power and his resources in it. And we do the very same thing that the disciples did. They were looking with human eyes at human resources and they were missing the bigger picture. Listen, did they have any kind of inclination that God could do this kind of thing? Well, they could have thought of Moses, or Moses and the rod in his hand. They could have thought of that. But they could have thought of Elijah and the cruse of oil that never ran out, that God kept multiplying it. They could have remembered the manna that was sent from heaven. They could have thought of all of those things. It's not that they didn't know God could do it. It's that they didn't think that he would do it. They were focused on themselves. I think the main lesson here for us is this: to trust God even when it seems impossible. God is perfectly able to do his work without us and without what we have, and yet he chooses to use our meager resources to magnify his goodness and his power in our lives. He took that boy's lunch and he did something special with it. I think there's a biblical principle as well that God takes what little we have and makes it much. God can take what's little in our hands and make it greater. Just think of all the accounts in the Old Testament, the New Testament, Moses' staff, a boy in his slingshot, Balaam's donkey, a little cruse of oil, the jawbone of a donkey, little boy's lunch. God can take the little that we have. He can take our insufficiency and he can do great things with it. God has no limits. God is not confined in your situation by your lack of resources. He has all the resources he needs. When God asks you to do something, you can do it. God always supplies exactly what we need, when we need it. Why? Because he is sufficient for all things. His resources, his sufficiencies, all that we need, and more than we could ever need. You know, I find it interesting here as we finish up that the disciples who didn't think that they could do anything to feed this whole crowd each got to pick up a basket that was full of leftovers when it was all done. I think Jesus has a way of teaching us and using us and rebuking us all at the same time. And that's what he does with these disciples. When we don't have faith, what needs to be done, Jesus still uses us and teaches us and rebukes us in it at the same time. We need to understand, we need to be constantly reminded that he is sufficient. He's all you need. It doesn't minimize the problem. The problem may still be great in your life. It doesn't remove the suffering. There's still suffering. There's still great need. But when we understand that Jesus is sufficiency, we see Jesus as being greater than the problem. And that leaves us in a place of trust. That leaves us in a place of hope. It leaves us in a place of peace. Why? Because we know that though we have great needs, we have an even greater God who can meet all of those needs. He is absolutely sufficient. But he wants us to lean into him. He wants us to rest in him. He wants us to take these things to him so that he can meet them in and through us. He is sufficient.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of his word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.